Hey everyone, welcome to the Modern Buddhism podcast. And today I'm in conversation with Marlise Antonios. She's been studying, practicing and teaching meditation and Buddhism within the Kadampa Buddhist tradition for some years now. In this fantastic conversation, we explore so many topics. One aspect of this that I felt really helpful and deeply moving is really exploring the meaning of life, which of course all of us have that question in our mind a lot of the time. But also we look at this through the lens of family life, and she explores how we can all learn to use our experience of our family life to really transform how we experience our day in our life. So Marlise, thanks a lot for dropping into the podcast today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you. I think there's going to be so much in this episode to help so many people. So thanks for dropping in.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you. So I guess today this episode really is focusing on how we can use everyday life, everyday work, everyday life, and in particular also exploring a bit family life and relationships and so forth, to really grow spiritually, to really engage in this process of inner development that leads to the development of these good qualities of our heart, such as love, compassion and wisdom, how we can use all of our life and our family life to really improve that day in, day out. So I'm hoping to explore that with you today and have a conversation around how that might help people listening today. But I guess the starting point would be a little bit exploring your background and how it led you to this living this Buddhist way of life that you're living nowadays. So maybe you could explain a little bit about what led you in to that particular way of life over time.
It's a long process. I guess as many people, when we ask this question to people, it's sometimes a long process because it's about inner development. So for me, it started when I was just married. It sounds like when you're just married, you're happy. I mean, we have everything. We have a new apartment. Everything was going well. My husband has a good job. And then we decide for many reasons, like material reasons that or also cultural reasons. I was born in Cameroon, actually. And in this country, women usually are at home, care about the children, and the men go to work and so forth. So so for me, it was obvious that I will care about my children and I will stay home, and that my husband can go at work because his wage is higher than mine. Eventually, so everything was going well, I guess. But actually, I was becoming depressed a little bit because I was looking people around me, and everyone seems to go somewhere, like my teacher Geshe Katsang used to say in his book. People has suitcase and they go to work and they seems happy, and it was like that. I saw people, they have a goal, they seems happy. But I didn't. I was not. So I see that it was not outside. It was something going wrong with me. I mean, maybe many person are like that. That they feel that something's going wrong. You have to be happy when you have all the external conditions. But we also know by experience that it's not true. I become very, very bad, like crying all day long. And I have my little girl and baby born, and I can't going like that in this way, like being depressed. I have to do something. So I call, and usually when you are in this situation, you go to the psychiatrist, but we don't know. It's not in my culture. So, and if you ask some people help, they may say, oh, you know, you're thinking too much. Just relax. You have everything. It's okay. the one person I thought about is was my father, because he was priest, sent in Africa as a missionary. And I was, but I was impressed. Like, I can't tell him, I couldn't tell him it's I'm not good, I'm feeling bad. So I just asked him, what is the truth of existence? Because that was my main question that come up. Why people are suffering in the world? Why I suffer a lot in the past from many separation, difficult life, poverty, or sickness? And it was like, you know, when you have this background and you come in Europe, it's like you reach something, you reach a goal. The final goal is this. You arrive in somewhere that is the good place, and you are in France, you're in the place to be. But yeah, what's next? What come next, you know? Because I have everything. For people in my country, I have everything. I'm a rich person. I don't need much more, like going work, and so it's like difficult to explain that you're not happy. It's shame, you know. So my father answered this question: what is the truth? What is your mission? How do you find your mission? Because I felt like useless. Just sitting here caring for children, it's not like a good job to do. And he said to me, it's just my faith. I follow my faith, my conviction in Jesus. I was like, well, okay, I don't feel that I have this faith. So the answer was correct, because now I can tell it that when you're in spiritual path, faith is the root. But I didn't, it doesn't correspond, or according to my experience, it was not the same feeling. So I asked my brother, one of my brother, who sometimes he has this inner condition, sometimes it's really difficult for him. And he, because I was like, maybe I become crazy with these thoughts without answer. Nobody know how to do, where, why we are living, why we're dying, why we do all of this, why we put so many efforts at work and for children, having warm. We do so many things, and it in hardship, you know. And we're still not happy. My brother, his answer to that question, what is the truth of existence? He said something crazy that maybe no one will think about. The light inside you. So I was like, wow, I like that. How to find that? It makes sense for me at that moment, because when you're depressed, it's like the darkness inside, inward. So light maybe can come also inside this darkness. So I literally sit down, think about, what is my mission in this life? What can I do? And something miracle, like miraculous magic, come up. Others. I don't know how to do that. What does that mean to other? What is others? Okay, maybe work for others. And this was so good. I mean, I felt uplifted. I felt that my energy come back, that I was motivated to do something, a new goal, you know. And it's a huge job. Like, you have all living beings. How do you do that? I'm a little person. So then I start to looking outside, because everybody is look outside, how to help. So I thought maybe I can come back in Africa, in Cameroon, where I was born, and because everyone here has everything, so maybe if I go back, I can help. I can create a kibbutz, or because we can live in community, we can make people have crops. I was reflecting how I can help with my skills I had at that moment. I did management in business, but I didn't like the part of like going to people and talking to people, because from my background, I have a difficult time with people. I see many violence in my life and being mistreated. Can you say that? And I just want to be okay. I can help people. I want to love people, but not too close, you know. So, and accountancy, I say, well, I study accountancy. Maybe I can do it again and go far, and this will be my skill. And then I can go for maybe non-profit organization, and in this way I can help. Yeah, but after all, I make many research about that. I started the study, but it was so boring. I didn't end this study. I just stopped because I saw that, I was not motivated to do that. I really want to help, like with my hands, with my body in action, you know. And what I want to say, it seems to me that it's so temporary. And because I saw in Cameroon those kind of organization coming and going, and at the end nothing left. I even saw my father very close experience, that he did all of these things as a missionary Catholic. And he helped people to find water, to grow crops, and he said that at the end of his life, nothing left. It's like I did so many things, and it's like a drop in the ocean. I felt that. So I left this. At the meantime, in parallel, I was doing yoga. And Aikido, because yoga is too slow for me. I was like, I need something more strong, more physical. So I started to do Aikido. And in one day, and someone asked me, how do you come to do Aikido? And I said, well, I was doing yoga. And wait a minute, I didn't explore the meditation path, part of this practice. Maybe I can find something there at the same time. So I was looking in the book, because in yoga, you know, sometimes the teacher was talking about Zen, Buddhism. So what is that? This kind of things in Africa, nobody knows these things, you know, in our community. We don't know what is a chakra and those vocabulary, you know. And so then I explore this part of the practice and discover meditation, what is karma in some books, what Buddhists believe. And that was so incredible, because I was also all the time thinking that, there is nothing comes like randomly. There must be something that is the cause of everything, or it's weird to say that, you were born and you live, you die, and there is nothing, and there's no cause of that. And after, what's coming next, you know? So that was so amazing for me to discover that. And one day I go to the library in my city in Lyon, and I saw the book of a Tibetan book of death, something like that. It's a big book. And I start to read it, and it was like too complicated maybe. And beside this book, there is a book of Geshe-Kel Sangye Tso Rinpoche called How to Transform Your Life. So I read this book, literally almost all the book here. And it was like, wow, this is what I need. How to transform my life. How to love people. They explain what is karma, what is the meaning of life, etc. So yeah, that's how I come through practicing Buddhism. I find a center very close, and I start to go there. And my first teaching was, guess what? The three loves. Yeah, how to love. That's how I started.
It's perfect. And it's, you know, listening to that story, I think there's so many people listening today on this podcast that are thinking, my life is very similar to that today. They're thinking, actually, my life feels like that. You know, from one perspective, maybe people are thinking, yeah, I have the things that normally I thought if I had them, I'd be happy. And maybe I've been longing for them my whole life. And now I have them. I don't feel particularly any happier. I may get some temporary happiness as a result of getting my new apartment, you know, my new partner, my new whatever it is. And then you're left with that hole in your heart. You're left with that feeling in your heart, something's missing here. And we all long to resolve that question. And I think it's just beautiful the way you kind of go on that journey of what is the truth of existence? Because from one point of view, I should be happy now. But from another point of view, from my own direct experience, this isn't making me any happier. But often we're left with that question, like, what is my life about? And we die with that question, still asking ourselves, what was life about? You know, like you say, even your dad putting so much energy and so much effort into helping others. And then at the end, you know, what am I left with? Obviously, a lot of positive, loving, compassionate minds coming from that work and so forth. But still, at the end of the day, we're left with that question. But I just think it's lovely in your journey that you just would not rest until you get to some answer on that. And we do that, don't we? We ask people and they try their best to help us. Say, well, this is my experience. They're like, yeah, but it's not answering my question. Or your brother saying, this is my experience. And you're like, oh, maybe that's beginning to answer my question. Even though it might seem, even to you at the time, what a strange thing to say, the light. But in one sense, it resonates with us because there's a part of us within all of us that has this peaceful potential. And all of those potentials for what you began to discover more and more, as you say in your story, is really where you began to realize, oh yeah, I shift my mind off myself. I move my heart to others. That's the best way to live. And anyone who's struggled with depression or struggled with really tough times in their life and that mental and emotional burden of that will know that to be true. It's when you start to gradually and gently move your mind off of that excessive self-concern and also excessive beating ourselves up for feeling this way, feeling guilt and shame that we even feel that. When we move our mind off ourselves and gradually, gently move our mind to others, it's such a deep sense of relief for someone who's struggling that much because they seem to not be able to move their mind off themselves at all. But as you say, in that journey then, you're kind of exploring and you're thinking, okay, well, there's something here. And you keep walking through that journey. But what I love is the way that then culminates in your first teaching being the three types of love. And then it's like it kicks the door wide open on that one. Do you know what I mean? Because when I first heard those three types of love, developing this affectionate love, this warm-hearted feeling of closeness and connection to everyone, it blew my mind. It absolutely blew my mind. Imagine just feeling that way to everyone you meet. And everyone feels like a friend. And then you have that cherishing love that thinks everyone's happiness is important, just as important as my own. Everyone's freedom from suffering is important. And then that wishing love that just deeply wishes in your heart that everyone experienced that. For me, when I first heard that, I'm sure for you, it just kicks the door wide open on a whole new way of living. Now, in fairness, I'm still learning what that means, but still, just even knowing it, just even getting a taste of it, it's just so transformational. So I think it's just so beautiful in your journey that it took you to the very thing that inspired you from the beginning, which is others. I move my heart to others.
Yeah, especially that it was not easy to do that. It was I was deep, deep in depression. And when you go there, it's difficult to be in another place, because you're completely surrounded by this feeling of being useless, by being not so good person. You're leaving your child alone, and you're feeling guilty. And yeah, but this first experience shows me even now. I always try to remember this experience. You know, you have this experience of being very sad, very bad, and also having this experience that is the opposite. Open your heart to others, feeling that there is so many things to do. So you have energy because you see that you can do something with your life that is meaningful. And this experience deep in your heart shows you it's a nice feeling. It's really like light. Yeah, it's a light in your mind. So I'm not surprised when Buddha said that, yeah, it's being enlightened, like it's a mind.
And that's what's beautiful about that, because when someone is going through depression or they're struggling with life, it does feel like, you know, this like very hot, dark, heavy clouds in the mind that I just can't seem to shift. Like there's no way I can shift this. I'm deeply identified with this. I can't move beyond this. But what we discover through that journey with meditation and so forth, you can gradually, slowly, gently over time, not immediately, begin to clear those clouds. Whatever's bothering your mind, whatever's burdening your mind, you can clear those clouds and kind of let that inner light shine, let that inner sun shine in your heart. Because in truth, behind those clouds, there's a natural peace and a natural goodness within everyone's hearts. Not a normal peace. And normal good qualities arising in our heart, especially when we're struggling, but a natural one that we can access and connect to. And I guess that's the beauty of meditation for anyone who is struggling with that and wanting to move to a place where they feel that increasingly light, unburdened mind. It's know that meditation will help you clear the clouds gradually, slowly, gently. And then you can connect to that inner light or that inner sunshine, if you want to use an analogy. Sounds a bit cheesy, that, but but you can connect to that, because that love and that kindness and compassion are just an expression of your own pure nature. And it's not going to be perfect every day, but no day is perfect anyway. And that's okay, because as you know, when you start to feel that, it starts to really change how you relate to your family, your partner, your kids. And I guess for you, that must have been the gradual growing experience. Now, as I begin to connect with that inner potential, I start to try to live with more love and compassion. It must have had quite an impact on how you were then beginning to see your partner, your kids, and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. I start to watch my mind and see whenever this misery or sadness come. I immediately start to, okay, you know what is coming next, so stop it. Forget and try to cherish the person, the next person who is coming in this room. Just cherish this person. And of course, when you are like me, living with your partner for 25 years almost, the first years it's very nice, it's like romantic and everything, and then it's going down and down, and you see the faults, you see the bad habits, you focus on all those bad things. You don't want to live with this person. You didn't think that he will be like that, or she will be like that. And you expect, you have many expectations about your partner. You want him, or your family, your friends, you want them to be others than they are. And so this mind, it's complicated to extract ourselves from this expectation all the time about our companion. So I saw, for instance, when we were together before meeting the teaching modern Buddhism, an example that's come to my mind is when he was working, he's an alcohol worker, and I was at home with the kid, and when I asked him, when do you come back home. I prepare everything. We have to, maybe we planned to have an outing, and to go to the cinema or restaurant, something like that. And he's just said, "No, I come back. I can't. I have many work to do. I'm sorry." But you know, it's like, okay, you put your expectation that you think that he could make you happy with that, but so you grasp at this situation. You want that what you planned to be realized, you know. And I start to see this mind of that we called attachment, having this expectation about others. That's the contrary, the opposite of love. And so when it's come like that, I'm like, okay. I was so angry about him because he doesn't respond to my wishes. So yeah, this is an example. There are many examples like that. For instance, with kids, when in my turn I left the kids to go somewhere like a festival or something, and I can see that I have this mind that's glue and that's want that things, oh, I'm gonna miss you, or I don't want to leave you because I feel so important in their life. The same thing that I felt important when he didn't come home, and I said, okay, you prefer your work than me or than my children, our children. So yeah, just do it in your own. And like, you know, things start to be like really going wrong, you know. So it's good to know those things and make a relation with this mind of attachment expectation. And then we can start to stop it. And then that's how I start to do with things to meditation and watching my mind, seeing that, and then try to do the opposite. And I see the difference now.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's like when people are listening to this and they're thinking, I totally resonate with Marlise's story there, because that is exactly how I experience my relationship with my partner, with my kids. I have this high expectations of other people to behave a certain way. But no one can live up to the expectations that we have, because the expectations that we have is that they behave perfectly the way I want them to today for me to be happy. And the problem with that is it's like it just naturally leads to unhappiness, because people can't behave perfectly every day and they don't have to. But the problem for us is the suffering that comes for us and the challenges we have in that relationship is really these high and unrealistic expectations. But there's such peace in our own hearts and gradually in our relationships with others when we let go of the expectations. We realize it's just coming from this distorted mind of attachment, thinking in some way, you are the source of my happiness, therefore you need to do your job. Which is simply, by the way, to make me happy all the time. And they're struggling clearly to make themselves happy most of the time. And like when we're in that position, it's like we are the one who's suffering the most, because they cannot live up to those unrealistic expectations. But also as a result of that, we get frustrated with them, get angry with them. And then as a result of that, we start to disturb that relationship with them. And really, they're just living their lives, trying their best, struggling with things just like we do. But it's great. It's beautiful the way you went on that journey of like really just identifying it, because I think that's so empowering for anyone listening. It's like you can begin to let go of these habits of mind, especially this painful mind of attachment. But the first step in that is to be able to identify that tendency within the mind without identifying with it. Thinking, I'm this needy person, I'm this unrealistic person, I'm a terrible partner, I'm a terrible mother, I'm a terrible father. No, actually, you're just struggling with your mind like everyone else in the world. Once you identify it and don't identify with it, as you say, then we can begin to use that meditation practice to begin to recognize it in a healthy way. Not judging ourselves for having it, but recognizing it's not helping me. Reduce its power through meditation and daily life. And then gradually, as radical as this may sound to people who are listening, as you know, gradually abandon it. We don't have to have that pain of attachment in a relationship. We can actually open the door more and more to increasing that experience of love for our partner and love for our kids.
Yeah, something that remind me about identifying ourselves, not identify ourselves to this feeling of attachment, but of love. For instance, many women, or maybe men, I don't know, we feel sometimes like we are our body in the beginning of our relation with our partner. We seduce, we did things because we identify ourselves with our body, that is beautiful, that is things, that is like that. And then, because if we were our body like that, you know, that's crazy. That will bring suffering, because when you are pregnant or when you are sick, when you get old, all of these things that's happened to your body, it seems like if you didn't identify yourself with this body, you feel bad as well when this body is degenerated.
Both work.
Yeah. And if your partner do the same, so it's like, you are not good enough for me. And sometimes as a woman, we feel that, oh, I'm not good enough now because now I'm pregnant. Maybe he will go find someone else because now I'm not beauty. Now I take weight, and, you know. So identifying ourselves is a very good point, because we start with practicing love and cherishing other. We have this confidence that comes because we have this inner peace. In mental peace that grow. And because we have this confidence, we trust other. We don't think he will bring me this happiness I'm looking for, because I'm happy with myself. And who is myself? I'm happy with, it's not my body, it's something else. I'm much more better than my body. I'm just a person who is wanting to be happy all the time, who want to avoid suffering, and I have this potential to grow to those qualities of love and compassion, patience, and wisdom. So if we identify ourselves with this potential of growing, we are confident, and so yeah, and our partner can see. Through the practice of those qualities, to developing these qualities, that it's functioning. So she seems better. I speak from my experience. I felt better and better due to this practice of loving and cherishing. Cherishing myself is cherishing this potential that I can do it. I have this confidence. So I stop just to waiting my husband to do things for me, to make me secure, to give me material things. If it's there, I'm okay. Thank you. If not, no problem. Because I have everything. I have everything I need here. So I just need, if you are not happy, I can help maybe, because I have this mental space to do that. So then we can share. We can have a good relationship. We can have this trust of others. Because I remember, I was like thinking that maybe because now I was grasping at my body, I'm not now the woman he met, or myself. I was doing this toward him. He's not. He take weight, and he's not the man I met before. You know. Because why? Because we grasp at the body. We think that this body is him. It's, people are much more than that. And maybe we have this idea that in a couple, in two person, they have just, they have to be like having sexual activities all the time, if having desire attachment actually for one and another. But if all of this desire attachment reduce, then we can love other behind that, because there is something much more beautiful to in his mind, something we see, and then we can support and encourage each other in this way with letting our potential grow.
Yeah, it's so beautiful, that point, because I think it's very liberating from one perspective and also incredibly empowering from another. Because it's true, whether it's a woman and also men, we struggle with our sense of self-esteem, and often we struggle with it on the basis of our physical appearance and how therefore others interpret who we are, what we are, on the basis of that. And if our self-identity and our self-esteem is based on an ever-changing phenomenon, meaning our body, if it were really basing our whole sense of self-esteem and self-identity on that, can be incredibly disturbing over time, as you say, as you go through changes in your life and you get older and so forth, and all of these various changes to our body. It's just very, very debilitating when we relate to ourselves in that way. And I think it's that thing, you know, self-esteem and that kind of understanding, that really is just a confidence in your own sense of self-worth and your own abilities, your own capacities. And when we base our sense of self-worth on something external, our body, or how others perceive our body and perceive us, it can really deeply undermine your self-esteem. What I love about the way you explain that is when you start to connect with something within you that is the truth of who you are, that's always reliable. Like, I have this innate peace and goodness within me. I have this pure potential for qualities such as love, kindness, compassion, and I can continually cultivate that, strengthen that, base my self-identity on that truth. Then however others perceive me is fine, because they're only perceiving me based on their own struggles with their own mind or what they think they need from me. But actually, the more I live from that peaceful mind and good heart every day, and I start to base my self-identity on that truth. And that's the beauty about truth. It's unshakable because it's the truth. And it really is okay if people have a different perception of us, because we understand, actually, I'm finding now peace of mind, joy in my love for you, not what you think of me. And that is so much more empowering and so much more encouraging. So in one way, we're liberating ourselves from that undermining capacity that we have in our mind to completely destroy our self-esteem by identifying incorrectly with our body, and now we're identifying with something that's true. But the beauty in that is it's helping everyone else as well, because when we start to feel I have this pure potential within me, I would suggest, and everyone can try this on the podcast gradually over time, I would say it's impossible not to see it in others if you know it to be true in yourself, that everyone else has the same potential, no matter how much they're struggling to live up to it today. And that's great, because then our kids get a break, our partners get a break. They can mess up whenever they like. That's fine with us, because we know they have the potential one day at a time to move in a direction that's better. And one of the ways we can encourage that is by us trying to be that person today, because our example is far more powerful than our words. And that's what I love about that kind of journey you've been on with that. It's just like, now all I need to do is live with that peaceful mind and good heart of love and compassion, and let's see where it goes with the family and how they may be inspired by that over time.
Yeah, and this mind bring us acceptance, patience, because you see that they do what they can with their mind in this moment, but you believe in their potential, in their good qualities, and so you can be patient whenever they cracks or doing bad things with you, for your children, even your husband, you're okay. That's okay. And sometimes when we get upset from one another, we know, okay, it's not the end of the world. That's okay. I know he's not like that all the time. He can switch on another person. That is the best part of himself, you know. Someone who has a very good heart, and I can relate it on that, and not this aspect of him I can see now, an angry person. So we can choose, we have this freedom to choose what we want to see from our partners or children. And this is possible when we have this space, this mental space inside, this freedom.
Yeah, it's so important that, isn't it, that aspect of it, because I know you touched on it earlier, that because I'm thinking of friends of mine who are listening to this potentially. I don't know if they are, but maybe they might be. Friends of mine who wouldn't normally consider meditation to be part of their everyday life. And frankly, I know friends who are thinking, I don't have 5 minutes in my life, never mind 20 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever, to sit and meditate. But it is, as you say, when there's space in your mind and you're not burdened by the stresses and the strains of everyday life. And as I'm thinking of my friend's family life, they have a lot of kids and super busy. The thing is, like, that seems to be the last thing on my priority list. I've got to get on with the reality. But as you're saying, when there's space in your mind, that day-to-day life that you're struggling to deal with today will become a lot easier. It's actually making me think about, there's a quote in the book, The New Eight Steps to Happiness, The Buddhist Way of Loving Kindness, which I love that title. Geshe Kelsang talks about this. He says, unless we make some time to meditate daily, I can't remember the exact wording as we're looking at here, but I'll paraphrase. Unless we make the time to meditate each day, we'll find it very difficult to maintain a peaceful, positive mind. And he talks about in that quote how it's not selfish to take time to sit and to meditate, because actually ultimately we discover the purpose of meditation is to continue to improve our love and our compassion for others. So when we take time to meditate, he talks about, we get a chance to kind of basically step back from life, see things in perspective and gather our thoughts. And just in that case, as we learn to do that, we create the space in our hearts to go about our busy daily life. But also we create this, or we cultivate this love and compassion that enables us to navigate that day and that life and everything we're doing with our family in such a healthier way. So the way you're explaining that, it's like there's space in your mind to see them differently. But that's the process of, as you know, consciously taking the time every day, some quality space and time to sit down and really engage with your heart. Let go of what's burdening your mind. Because what's burdening your mind is going to be brought into that family and life situation. Let go of that. Connect with these good qualities of the heart. And then there's space for you to see them differently, see their potential.
Yeah. I understand that when you have a busy life, it's difficult to take this time. And it seems like you use the precious time you need to do so many things. Because today, nowadays, we have so many activities. But we choose, you know, it depends what is your motivation, what do you want? If you understand that, okay, I can, because, you know, we can decide to do like gymnastic and going to a club and doing things, other things, you know, and it seems to us very important. But the perspective of Buddhism is to show us that you can do it, but you know it doesn't bring a really really happiness you're yearning, you know. So yeah, we can take time if you want to. It depends if it's important for us. We always take time. We take time to go watching videos and things like that because we think it's going to be good for us, because we're going to relax and we're going to be good. So we do it because we think it's important. So maybe we can just reflect on what is really, really meaningful and important in our life. But when we discover this mind of love and our good qualities, it's like, it's so liberating that it's a motivation all day. I want that. So I go, I sit down and I do it because it's good for me and it's good for my children. It's good for my husband or my wife. It's good for my colleague. It's good for my community. It's good for everyone. So it's not selfish to just sit down and do it and do this. And it's good now, but also in the future.
It's lovely that when you think about the way you're reframing that, I think for me, that's kind of like where the energy to continue to do it comes from. It's like when you start to, as you say, it's good for my kids, it's good for my partner, it's good for my community, it's good for the world, really. When you start to kind of shift that way, you start to find this new found source of energy to sit and meditate every day. And I think that is also, you are able to, through that, begin to bring that deeper love, bring that deeper compassion, even that deeper wisdom into everyday life, so that as you start to engage with your life from that peaceful mind and good heart of love and compassion, it's just like, it always feels to me like this natural feedback mechanism. Oh yeah, this works. It doesn't just work for me, it works for everyone I meet today. Prior to all of this, I was just a burden to everyone I meet today, stressing out about this or that. But as you say, when we really start to cultivate those qualities of love and compassion, it really energizes you, because sometimes when we're just doing it for ourselves, the energy can come and go. And that's okay. We do need to do it for ourselves as well. But when you start to open that door to cultivating this deeper love and compassion for others, it's like, I'm not just doing this for myself. I'm doing this for everyone I meet today, everyone I think about today, and everyone I haven't even thought about yet. But through this practice, I'm beginning to connect with them. And I'm finding this energy to want to sit and meditate in the morning. This is the best gift I can give to myself. It's the best gift I'm going to give to my family today, that's for sure. I sometimes think about that at Christmas. You know, we get all these gifts. And like, you know, it's always complicated. With my family, it's never-ending lists of very complicated things that I can never find. Thankfully, then all of these online retailers came along and it gets easier. But what happens, I often think at Christmas, actually, if I just turn up, I'd come back from where I was abroad and come back to Ireland with the family. If I just turned up with a loving heart and accepting mind and not moaning about things, that would be the best gift I'll give to them today. But it's almost like in our practice, you start to realize this isn't just a gift to me. It's a gift to my family. It's a gift to my kids. It's a gift to everyone I meet. It's just so energizing.
Yeah. That's what gives us this power to do things for others, because, you know, sometimes we, as I told my story, we think that we can do things with our little arms and body, and we do things for others, but they are immeasurable. So if you, but this power in our mind of love and compassion, that will bring us the energy to do things for others. And I have this example of people coming in our meditation centers and talking about how they were involving in a association and helping others, but then they get burnout. Why? Because maybe they forget the first aim. Maybe they wanted the conviction, why they want to do that. Maybe. So I think this is really powerful to never, for myself, I don't forget this first experience that bring me there. It was selfish intentions always lead to suffering and problem, depression, and no energy to do things. But then when you have this mind of love, and it's so beautiful, it's light. So you have this energy to do things for others.
It's so true, isn't it, that though? You do even feel like, you know, physically lighter when you have a lot of love or compassion in your heart. Do you know what I mean? And when you don't, like, you can feel physically quite heavy, your mind feels really heavy. But it's that, like, because often people would say that, like, oh, that's a really loving person, they're always doing things for others. Well, I listen to the first bit. That's a really loving person, because obviously who they are is really kind of allowing that energy and those actions to flow from there. Because sometimes, as you explained beautifully there, it's true, people, they really want to give their life to helping others, but then eventually they feel like they're burning out. They get that, you know, that phrase that's sometimes used nowadays, compassion fatigue. You just, like, your compassion just kind of eventually begins to dissipate, because at some level, those actions are flowing from maybe some sense of, I can fix this. In an unfixable world, things are changing all the time. People are struggling with their life in so many different ways. It's not that we shouldn't help. We definitely, and if you have love and compassion in your heart, I think it's impossible not to practically help others. So we can practically help on one level, but on the other level, we're really trying to help people with the solution to long-term freedom from suffering. And that kind of compassion never exhausts. We never get fatigued because it energizes us. I'm going to help my family today. I'm going to help my friends today practically because I love them and I have compassion for them. But I'm going to complete this spiritual path that I'm on for their sake. I'm going to continue to engage in this. And the more I do, of course, the more this natural feedback mechanism begins to grow. I can bring an end to my suffering. I'm beginning to understand that. Therefore, they can bring an end to their suffering. Now I know that. And now what can I do to help them with that? Because that will always energize you, lifetime after lifetime without end, you know?
Yeah. Just to come back that about what you said about your family when you're in holiday, it's like you have this energy when you go to see your parents and relatives, and then you can just come with your body and your mind full of love and compassion, and then you can help them cooking things for Christmas and doing so many things that they will completely enjoy your presence, because you share things with them, you share your presence, your love and everything, and it's so practical. And they can feel that. So you don't need to you can come with a gift, but I feel that in my own experience that when my best gift is when I'm completely available and give without expecting nothing to my family. I give to my family, to my community, and to my close family. And then when I go to see my siblings and others, I can also give them something. But sometimes when we go to see our parents, we feel exhausted in advance just to go there because we know that there are so many conflicts and so forth. But when you come with this mind of love and compassion, you want to share something you have in your heart, and you prepare, you're cooking. If they are exhausted, it's okay. I can do it for you. That's the best gift. They will appreciate because they feel tired, like you, because they did so many things in the year and it should just come, like children come at home and want to rest. And you can give them this love by cherishing them. So that's the best gift we can give to others.
Such a nice thing for us all to reflect on, because I'm thinking of people listening and thinking, yeah, but how do I get there? Because I have that sometimes. But actually, if I'm honest, it comes and goes quite quickly. But what we're talking about since the beginning of this conversation today is actually this is a journey. None of us just flick a switch and we're good to go, in the sense that we flick a switch within us, that love and that compassion's always there. It's a journey, and we learn as much through the mistakes and the challenges we have with these trainings as we do through the good days. But it's through those challenges you realize, actually, the more I take refuge, meaning the more I deepen and rely upon my love for others, instead of taking refuge in my unrealistic expectations of others, then actually I begin to discover, yeah, no, this really is the way forward. And I guess that's the thing, is not to be too concerned, anyone who's listening today, that in some way, I'm just not that kind of person. As we've explored a little bit today, everyone has the same potential for all of these good qualities in the heart, no matter how much you doubt it today. And of course, if you haven't trained in these methods, if you're anything like me prior to this, you're definitely going to doubt it without a shadow of a doubt. But also, Buddha explained that potential within us is limitless. And the great news is completely indestructible. So no matter what your life has been like up until now, no matter what your family life has been like up until now, that potential is just waiting to be activated and cultivated. And in these trainings, and as you explain, learning and meditation, we can cultivate these qualities of love and compassion and so forth. And so that we can begin to see that as I begin to change my life from the inside out, my family life begins to change completely. And I guess that must be your own experience gradually over time. Of course, again, never perfect, but gradually over time, I'm sure for you, it's been similar to that. You change your mind, your whole family life changes.
Yeah, I remember, yes, thinking that my family was an obstacle for me to have this time to meditate, to go in retreat and doing things that I really want to do. But once I start to use my daily activities, use my relationship to transform this mind that thinks others are a problem, they are not a problem. It's just the way we think. We can switch off this negative view of them and start to thinking in the positive way. Just a funny example. Sorry, darling. My husband is like a kid with other kids. So sometimes I used to say, I have three kids actually. My husband is the third one. And if you have ordinary mind of just seeing we have to be a couple with authority, and especially in front of other people or the adults, what they gonna think about that. And then, you know, maybe if we just try to connect with another way of thinking, and like, what do does the other person think about his behavior as a kid? Maybe they're thinking, that's a wonderful guy. He's playing with his kids, and if we are in a party or something like that, he attracts other kids because they see that he's very funny. He's humble, you know, being humble. And as long as you want this mind of humility, because in modern Buddhism we learn that humility bring more love. We can build, grow, making our love growing. If we have this mind of humility, if you want that, you can see, you use your daily activity, you use your relationship, you transform the way you think usually by, okay, maybe if I exchange myself and try to see how other people see this person, my husband, maybe you see that he's a very good person because he has this humility, he's close to everyone, even children. You're like, I want that. I can start to admire this quality. You know, so yeah, we can transform. So it's about meditation in a cushion, of course, because we have to learn to how to do it practically. So we need time to prepare our mind. We need time to organize our life, and this is possible because, as everyone, I had a busy life with children, a job, and a family, and so forth. And so we can all manage our life, organize even externally to have few time to have this time to meditate, and then we also have to train outside the meditation. In transforming, or even if we don't have time, if we have this mind of those kind of view, I can change my way I see people, my negative view, and try to transform it in a positive way, see them in another way. Yeah, it's okay. So then you can make your love grow.
It's so powerful, that, isn't it? Because often when people think of meditation, they think it's sitting on a meditation cushion or in a chair and closing my eyes and going inwards and that's it. That's a very, very important part of deepening the experience over time. But there's the meditation session for doing that, and then it's what we call the meditation break. It's not a break from meditation, it's just a break from the formal meditation session. Really, that meditation break is what we call life. And really, you don't need to be sitting on a cushion to love your partner or your kids. You just need to be holding a warm heart, a feeling of closeness, feeling they're important, so forth, towards your partner and your kids, to really be meditating at that moment, like keeping that experience going in your heart. But as you say, you're watching your son playing with the kid, or sorry, your partner playing with the kids, and you're kind of looking at him from that perspective. And I think it's just amazing to be able to do that, where you switch minds with another person who's looking at your partner thinking, oh, he's really humble and he's really joyful and he seems to be able to give a lot of joy to the kids. It's like you're looking at it from their perspective, which then completely transforms your perspective, which then, of course, transform the quality of your relationship with your partner. And it's just such a flexible way to work in your day for people to think, I'm a busy parent or I've got a busy job, I don't have time for this. But as you're saying, there's always time if in your heart, as you said all through this talk, you know how to prioritize what's important to you, which is growing these qualities in my heart and allowing that to positively impact my family, my work colleagues, my world. I think it's such an empowering thing to think of that practice, and I'm certainly going to try it after today, because I think it just helps transform everything just by simply sitting in a room with a bunch of people and thinking what the other people think. I think that's wonderful. Elise, thank you so much for dropping in today. Really enjoyed this. I could carry on with this conversation for a few more hours. Have you got a few hours?
What?
Let's do it. Yeah. No, I'm joking. But thank you so much for dropping in today, because I think there's so much in there, certainly so much for me, and I'm sure for everyone who's listening. So I really appreciate everything today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam.
Hey everyone, just a quick one. We'd love to get these podcasts to more and more people over time so that many people can benefit from these conversations. So to help us get there eventually, and also if you think it might be helpful to somebody today, maybe you'd like or share this episode. Also to help us grow this channel over time, please feel free to subscribe. Thanks very much.